Awesome. Okay, so Leah Neuminkowitz is currently on mat leave, but before that was teaching history and Jewish studies at B'nai Akiva schools in Toronto, even though she's currently in Brooklyn. Leah graduated summa cum laude from Stern College for Women with a BA in history, where she co-edited the YU History Journal with a fellow Lehrer House editor. She holds a dual MA in Hebrew and Jewish Studies and Education and Jewish Studies from NYU, where she studied as a Wexner Fellow and Jim Joseph Foundation Fellow. More recently, Leah received her B.Ed. from the York University Jewish Teacher Education Program, and she serves as a Rosh Klinish for Camp Moshe Vabair in Toronto and teaches a weekly Tanakh class for the Mekorot Institute of Torah Learning for Women. Leah lives with her husband and three young children in downtown Toronto. And Leah, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for all coming out tonight on this second night of Hanukkah. I hope that you gained something from this conversation tonight, because that's how sort of I thought about the shiur, that to kind of delve and explore into an aspect of Hanukkah that is not as much talked about, which is kind of the money side of things. So let me start with a question. When I say Hanukkah gelt, what do you think of? What comes to mind? Go for it, Jonathan. Everybody can.
Chocolate, chocolate.
Chocolate. Okay. What else? You could just unmute or type in the chat if that's more.
Coins.
Coins. Proto presents. Okay. Anything else? What does Miriam think of? She's not sure. So when I think of Hanukkah gelt, we can go in a bunch of different directions. We've got our chocolate coins, we've got money for playing dreidel, and we've got gifts of money to kids. And by extension, I think we could think about sort of presents, which we'll kind of talk a little bit about later, about the money to presents kind of shift. So this is kind of where I'm going with tonight. We're gonna unpack these gifts of money to kids, what's called in Israel Dmei Hanukkah, or Hanukkah gelt in its original meaning, before the chocolate companies turned it into a thing to sell in the 20th century. So pretty much what we'll do is we'll kind of trace like the origins of Hanukkah gelt, like where exactly does this even come from in the Hanukkah story, in the sources, from kind of origin ideas to kind of present day iterations. And we'll also sort of uncover some significance and some values. So in each of the sort of reasons for this minhag, there are some kind of animating idea that's actually really interesting and important to kind of pull out. And then we'll kind of close with some like really practical ideas as we kind of are in the earlier part of Hanukkah. And I don't know how many of you have given already or received already, but there's some educational sort of value in this minhag of Hanukkah gelt that I hope we can kind of walk away with some practical ideas. So we'll talk about that as well. All right. So let's get into our origins or our reasons for Hanukkah gelt, for Dmei Hanukkah. So on a very basic level, when the Hashmonaim were victorious, they sort of minted a coin, which was pretty typical of the kind of Hellenistic world. There were many kind of many Hasmonean coins. This is one of them that I don't believe dates exactly to as early as the Hanukkah story, but there was a sequence of sort of later. So there is a coin to kind of commemorate the victory, of the small group of Maccabees over their Greek enemies. Then we've got another sort of reason or origin of the Hanukkah gelt is to use with dreidels, right? So that the Greeks kind of believed that Jewish children were not studying Torah, and so coins is kind of used as together with the spinning top, the dreidel, as part of the game. Then we get a source. Coming from the Gemara from Shabbat 22a, which basically is a long kind of discussion about what a person may or an individual may or may not do in order to sort of make use or not make use actually of the Hanukkah lights. Like as we say, in we're not actually able to use these candles, these lights, we're not supposed to derive benefit from them on a light level. So it's the Gemara actually makes a specific point. It says it's prohibited to count money opposite a Hanukkah light. Atzur lahartzot ma'ot keneged ner Hanukkah. So we're not, one is not allowed to count money opposite a Hanukkah light. So in order to kind of make that distinction clear, we actually give money and we don't do it in the Hanukkah light in order to show that the Torah and sort of the Hanukkah light is more sacred and has a greater level of sanctity. Okay, so it's a little bit kind of like of reading it again, doing something against the grain. Like dafka, we're going to give money, but we're going to do it away because the Torah, sort of the Gemara says not to do it in the light of the Hanukkah. So this is something that when sources kind of come back to like, where is this kind of idea of giving money at Hanukkah? This is an idea. So we're making a point a bit of, about the primacy of Torah, which, as you can see already, is a bit of a theme coming through, right? Where the Greeks weren't allowing the Jews to sort of study Torah, to teach their children Torah. So the dreidel game sort of developed. So there is this idea of the Torah and children and sort of education kind of that we're going to start to see definitely carrying through. Then we have another idea, which is it's important on this holiday to increase in joy. We're supposed to be very, very joyful. The Rambam in Hilchot Megillah v'Hanukkah writes, "Hidkinu chachamim sheva'oto hadar sheyiyu shmonat hayamim ha'elu shetchilatan b'chafim kislev yimei simcha v'halel." So because of this, the sages in that generation instituted that these 8 days, which begin on the eve of the 25th of Kislev, should be joy, days of joy and thanksgiving, joy and praise. So this is like, and we know specifically that there's no fasting, right? There's no eulogies. This is, there were supposed to be great joy and money, the idea goes, the minhag sort of develops like that will, that brings joy, right? And so we can think about this extending to presents as well, that there is a definitely a Jewish idea in terms of making things happy, just for the simple idea of joy alone. And this is basically rooted in the Rambam. And then we get into the notion of tzedakah, of charity, which is very much kind of inherent in the Hanukkah holiday, and specifically in the idea of gelt, of money. So obviously like money, okay, but more so there is a little bit of nuance here that the halacha kind of pulls out. So the halacha, and the Rambam writes a lot about this in Megillah, in Hilchot Megillah v'Hanukkah, in Perek Dalet, like there are a few halachot that relate specifically to this, that one who lacks funds for Hanukkah candles should go to great lengths to get oil for the lights, even to the extent that they should sell their own clothes to obtain the necessary money in order to purchase candles and perform the mitzvah. So the minhag developed, and this is really like kind of, if we want to think about one of the main origins back in the day, to give money, was in order that there should be tzedakah, there should be funds for people to buy candles. Now, so this money was given to the poor, but it extended ultimately to sort of to everybody. The Belzer Rebbe basically says that, you know, he wrote that we're giving sort of to children, and we're giving to sort of everybody. So we're not singling out those that may not have enough money in order, you know, to do the mitzvah. So everybody sort of gets money, and those that need it towards those essentials will be able to do that and not have to sell their own clothes, God forbid, in order to perform the mitzvah. So this is something that is basically, we can see there's a great value of equity, of ensuring that everybody has access to this. And there is the notion of tzedakah and charity that is baked into this as well. Connected to this as well, to this idea, is this what I call imitatio Dei, or where we kind of imitate God, or we do something and we're hoping that God imitates us. Let's just put it that way. So here I have a source. This comes from a student of Rabbi Nachman, Rav Natan, and he says like this: "This is why we look for poor people who accept Hanukkah gilt. We look to, hang on a second. We look to emulate Hashem, who brings the light of his benevolence to our own homes. For we can't benefit from the light of the face of our living King without giving tzedakah. As we read in Tehillim, Ani b'tzedek echza panacha, and I with tzedek will see your face. So we are looking, basically, what our source is saying is we're trying to sort of copy Hashem. God brings light into our homes. And this light is sort of comes through through tzedakah. On Hanukkah, however, the poor people come into our homes, for they are the broken vessels, and they are the very light of Shekhinah, as it says, I shall reside, Eshkon, with the humble. The above mentioned Zohar says that when Hashem loves someone, he rewards him by sending him someone who is in need, and in these poor people who bring the divine light into our homes. So what's happening is that this light of tzedakah is kind of, these poor people are allowing for sort of like an avenue, if you will, of godliness to kind of come into our homes. And in some ways there is the sense where God will also kind of repay us, right, with this tzedakah. So we are looking to kind of bring in this channel as well with these poor people who are coming in. Finally, and this is kind of like the last angle, which we'll sort of speak, I think, for the most part, a lot about tonight, is the idea of Jewish education, of chinuch. So Hanukkah, there's many different kind of ways of breaking down the name Hanukkah that kind of allude to the different aspects of the night, of the day, of the chag. We have Hanukkah, you know, the Hanukkah Beit HaMikdash, the Hanukkah HaMizbeach, etc., dedication or rededication, when the Mizbeach, the Beit HaMikdash was sort of reconsecrated after the victory. We also have Chanu Chafei, right? They rested on the 28th. The battle had stopped between the Greeks and the Maccabees, and so they rested. Or some say Chen Chafei, grace. There was grace on the Chafei. There was as well, and a sort of a connected thing. And finally, we have Chanukah Milashon Chinuch, right? This is a holiday that has baked into it the element of education and of teaching. So we have several aspects of this chag that relates to education and teaching, and so and connected to that is our idea of gelt, which we'll see. So since the Torah was saved from being forgotten on Hanukkah, Hanukkah is a time when we increase our emphasis on Torah study. In this context, it became customary to show appreciation to our Torah educators during this time. So parents would send money to their children's rabbeim and teachers on Hanukkah. They would do this by sending the money with their children, and the children would thus learn to appreciate the value of the Torah and those who teach it. And this is still the case today. There's Hanukkah, right? There's always that Hanukkah present for teachers. And I'm not sure if it just seems like Grant maybe like, okay, it's the holiday. Let's give money. Like let's give a Hanukkah present. But actually for a long, long time, back sort of all the way dating back to the 1700s, there was this idea that we would give the teachers money because Hanukkah is a holiday that, you know, is about Jewish education and about the preservation of Torah. We want to show our appreciation for those teachers. And what's interesting is that, and I sort of bolded this myself, but we give the kids money to give to their teachers. Now, nowadays through Interact and, you know, like e-transfer and, or, you know, here it's like WhatsApp, and Zelle and Cash App and every Venmo and everything else that my Canadian phone doesn't support. But back in the day, I used to carry like the check to like maybe the class parent. And in some ways, like what I'm able to see is my parents valuing my teachers, right? And valuing the fact that like they want them to continue doing the work that they were doing. And this is something that is connected to the message of sort of Torah preservation and the emphasis on Torah learning that is baked into this holiday of Hanukkah. So eventually it kind of goes from giving the Hanukkah gelt to the kids to give the teachers to giving presents and gifts and gelt to the kids themselves. And it's basically in order to, so the kids would sort of see that the teachers are getting and they're getting something as well. And so the idea was, is originally there is this idea of gelt going to the teachers and going to, let's say, the poor people or the needy. But then from there, like kind of trickling out to something a little bit more widespread, especially specifically to the children. And we'll come back to this idea of the children a little bit later tonight. So, and here I just have, I'm not going to get into it very much, but we do have some sources that go back to the sort of 1730s that tell us about this custom in Izmir in Turkey. So this is sort of what we'll call the Sephardic world. There is the Hanukkah gelt that is in the Eastern European, in the shtetl. And it becomes this sort of charity and the malam, it's about charity to the poor and it's about education, but then it also goes to the kids and sort of everybody beyond that. So now let's get into sort of like the now times. Now that we established a little bit of what was, and we can see that there is the value of charity, the value of Torah study, and value of equity, and of giving, really, that was kind of inherent in Hanukkah gelt. Now let's kind of get to the present day and where things are and how things are. So let me ask you, if you want to think about kind of like, I wasn't sure what our age group would be here tonight, but I do believe even those of us who are on the younger end, things have changed dramatically from when we grew up, maybe. To our own kids, what kids expect around start with, like, how was it gifts? Was it like a modest sort of like gelt, like more for like the sake of things? Or, let's sort of like take a little poll here and see how things, my assumption is that things have somewhat changed. But let's hear from you.
You want us to just shout it out?
Yes, please.
Well, I'll say I received literal gelt, like money, I think once in my childhood from a very elderly person in my community. And otherwise it was always physical toys and presents. And it was only later on that non-Jewish peers started asking me if I got 8 presents, one for every night. That is not something that actually existed in my life, but it was an assumption that seemed to come from the outside. And as a point of jealousy for people who only had one present day in Christmas, but I don't think it was rooted in reality.
Interesting. So I'm hearing like a few things. First is that like an old person gave you the actual gelt. So already this might have been a bit of a vintage custom. Okay, and then it was one gift, and then maybe there was this keeping up with the Joneses that started happening of like, we need Hanukkah to compete with Christmas.
So neither of us, and we're from different countries, South Africa and England, neither of us were given gifts as children on Hanukkah. And not gelt or gifts. It was just a lighting the candles and
maybe a chocolate bar, but nothing else.
Oh, you got a chocolate bar.
Maybe. Yeah.
I grew up getting gifts from my parents and aunts and uncles, and my grandparents, one set of grandparents used to give me a gift and the other set would always give us money. So we would get some combination. And I think with gifts as kids, we appreciated that more than money.
You wanted the
gift. Foolish children, but I would have preferred, I preferred the toys to the cash, right? But my grandparents would give us money and everybody else would give us presents.
I had this just now, my daughter lost her first tooth. And so money, right? That's like the tooth fairy and like money. And so I figured like $5 is the going rate. We're not sure where we are. So it was, I gave her $5 US, $5 Canadian. and she requested, my daughter requested if I could let Tooth Fairy headquarters know. I also gave an extra dollar for Staka, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And she requested please a present, like the money was not so interesting for her. However, it was a really good opener for us to kind of talk a little bit about the value of money. And also, we'll talk a bit about this at the end. Jonathan, how about you? What was growing up like for?
So It was presents. So we would get one thing from my parents, and then if there was extended family or something like that who was in town, because we lived separate from all my family, then we would get something from them also. But it was always just a toy or a book or something like that. We've actually since stolen something from Raquel's family, and we now give books on Shabbat Hanukkah, so mm-hmm. that everyone has a book to read through the Shabbat.
I should add also, we always opened our presents like right after candle lighting, so there was definitely no sense of doing money away from the candles. If anything, that got conflated into doing it right around the yeah, right at the same time. It was part of the like evening Hanukkah celebration, so not sure about that.
I know, a bit of a surprise, like the dafka, the can, like the money away from the candle. I don't think it's one of those things, right, that gets kind of by the wayside. Anybody else?
Yeah, I got.
Gail, go ahead.
Gail. So I recall getting money from my grandparents. And honestly, I don't remember getting gifts at all. It was usually, if at all, I think my parents may have given a silver dollar.
Mm.
And that was a big deal.
Dr. Bergman?
I also got usually money from grandparents, and usually at a Hanukkah party, my parents and aunts and uncles would kind of give gifts to all the cousins around the same time, separate from the Hanukkah candles.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen over Hanukkah for you now as parents? Like most of you, I'm presuming, have found gifts or have given gifts or will give gifts to your kids? Anybody planning money?
Me. So when I was little, I loved getting gifts. I still love getting gifts. I love giving gifts. I love wrapping them. I still remember my best Hanukkah gift ever, which was an Easy Bake Oven. I remember it so vividly. We didn't give money in my family, but my kids as adult children prefer money now to gifts. They do. And I still bought them a gift, and I gave them money because I love giving gifts as much as I love receiving them.
Anybody else thinking about money? I want to make the case for money tonight, because I think that there's a tremendous educational kind of conversation that can happen when you're giving money. My parents do something nice, which is like is a dollar on night one, $2 on night two, $3 on night three, which is like altogether 36, which is nice, like two times high. But we'll talk a bit about like what you can do like in terms of the money conversation that somehow with gifts doesn't quite have the same effect. So we have our generation sort of now. And I think that most of us, even those of us who got gifts, like we can see that when we think about kids today, we're like, there's just like abundance. We just think about there just being a lot of excess, you know, like one toy one day, another toy the next day. And I know that at least for parents of my generation, we question and we worry about how do we cultivate an attitude of appreciation for this. When I was growing up, my parents talked about the starving children of Africa. I tried the other day to mention like the hungry kids in Yemen. My daughter was kind of like, okay, you know, but it's hard because we live in a world where like if we're looking at sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, at the most basic level, and I tend to think about this basic level as the Holocaust survivor generation, right, where their physiological needs needed to be met: food, water, warmth, rest, and to a large degree as well as sort of safety needs for security and safety. But once those needs are kind of met, and here we are in sort of the 21st century, and even in the 20th century, like you can start to climb higher and higher because the basic needs are sort of there. And so what back in the day might have been like, what's most important is these things. Nowadays, the needs are much more, I don't know if I'll call it more evolved, but they're further along in Maslow's hierarchy, right? We want we know that food and shelter will basically be pretty much, mostly guaranteed for most of us. And we're looking for belonging and love needs, right? In our intimate relationships and friends. We're looking for our self-esteem needs, prestige and feeling of accomplishment. And we're looking for self-actualization, right? To be the people we're meant to be, achieving one's full potential, and including sort of creative activities. This is reminding me of the book I've been reading called Maybe You Should Talk to Somebody. I don't know if anyone here read it, right? Which is a lot of fun, right? And it reminds me of sort of therapy. And like, if I would explain to my grandparents therapy, they'd be like, what do you need that for? Like, right? Like, because for them, like, they're on the sort of lower end of Maslow. Like, I was running from the Nazis and I was starving and eating potato peels, right? And I'm like, well, you know, how can I like sort of be my best self? And I think that like when we talk about sort of Hanukkah guilt in terms of this, right, where it's not that same level of appreciation for the small few coins or that little kind of knickknack, maybe I want something a little bit bigger and better, and because the kids are sort of in a different place in a different space, and then so the work really is about when you have kids and ourselves almost at these higher levels to kind of have that appreciation for the more basic things, right? That this isn't a given for everybody across the world. And that privilege, right, which is essentially what we're talking about here, is not something necessarily to be ashamed of, but it's something, it means you have something to give. You have actually a lot to give. And that's the sort of duty and that's the obligation here. I think the fear, I know growing up, like here, if anybody remember this, right? Baruch Assault from the original like Gene Wilder kind of adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? She's like the ultimate spoiled brat, right? And we're worried about this. Like, are our kids just spoiled just because they live in a world where like these things are guaranteed and they don't really see the work that goes into them and they don't, you know what I mean? Like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And so we worry. And so that's where I think Hanukkah guilt is actually a very important corrective and an important chance to kind of like talk about money and the value of money at the time where we're giving to the kids. And it's about them and it's about them spending actually that money, not necessarily, saving it. But we want them to think about money, to have that conversation about money. I don't know if you remember this terrible story of the kid, Ethan Couch, who killed four people in a car crash. And the psychotherapist who took the stand in defense called it affluenza. He had affluenza. Okay. And everybody was like, oh my God, affluenza, right? Like, not influenza. It's this spoiledness of being overly affluent. And so that's the worry. Where I fit in sort of Bitcoin, and I know this wasn't, for those of you who are hoping to talk about cryptocurrency, I apologize to disappoint. But the idea was, I guess, to sort of think about the way that money, the value of money and what we mean by money has shifted over the generations. And going from, the money that goes to paying for candles and for the Muhammad in the shtetl, to something that is meant to, add joy to the holiday. And our generation that we live in, it's like really like there's a lot on the table, a lot that's in flux. Money, the value of money has changed dramatically as we know it. Try to explain blockchain and cryptocurrency mining to somebody, older than, it's very hard. It's like, what are we talking about? Is this real? It's not. There's no national currency. It's not a country, a national currency. It's based on a system of trust, right? Of a group of people who believe in its value and then treat it as valuable. But what do we do about money and making money sort of valuable and meaningful in a world where money has sort of changed in big ways? Added to the fact that there is we live in a time of largesse, but is there really, like, there is also anxiety, and we'll talk about that sort of here. So where I'm going with all of this is really educating towards sort of a responsible attitude towards responsible use of money. And there's nobody who talks about this more eloquently and more intentionally than Lubava Tereza. I'm giving away my background, like from Chabad. I'm reporting live from Crown Heights, but like, I was looking, since the early days, since the 70s, the Lubavitch Rebbe has been emphasizing, like, give your kids money and talk about the money. Okay. Talk about it. Talk about what it means. Talk about what it symbolizes to your kid, to yourselves, and do something positive with it. So the first sort of like kind of quote I have here, and I don't even go into it, it's the Lubavitch Rebbe is basically saying, like, you should give Hanukkah gelt twice or three times on Hanukkah, and also before Shabbos, and also on the fifth day of Hanukkah, which is like very, you know, special, the fifth night in Chabad. Meaning, like, he's like, do it, show it, give it. And the idea is actually behind this is that Hanukkah gelt, and this is really sort of money in general, it involves this theme of transformation, which is very sort of much important in the Hanukkah sort of story, right? It involves the theme of transforming the mundane, silver and gold coins or paper money, into holiness. And here the sort of the Lubavitch Rebbe sort of does a read of Maimonides and sort of what exactly the Greeks were doing in the Holy Temple, in the Beit HaMikdash, and sort of understanding that in terms of what does it mean to kind of elevate money. So here he writes, Maimonides writes, the Greeks laid their hands upon the possessions of Israel. They laid their hands upon the possessions, okay? The Greeks invaded the possessions of Israel in the same spirit in which they defiled the oil in the Holy Temple. They did not destroy the oil, they defiled it. They did not rob the Jewish people. They attempted to infuse their possessions with Greek ideals so that they could be used for egotistical and ungodly purposes rather than for holy pursuits. Hanukkah gelt, then, celebrates the freedom and mandate to channel material wealth towards spiritual ends. And this includes, and here he's providing something practical, donating part, 10%, let's say maaser, of the gelt to charity and using the remainder for kosher, wholesome purposes. Money is not a bad thing, right? This is something that increasingly, sort of, especially those who are in the sort of higher socioeconomic brackets, there is a sort of like a shame around it, or we don't want to talk about it, or we don't want to emphasize it, because somehow it might, first of all, create spoiled children, or second of all, like, it's just like we don't want to kind of like talk about it. Somehow it's a dirty word, but in fact, there's like a tremendous amount of good that can happen. We can talk about the responsible use of money, how we can use it for the right sort of the right purposes, through charity, and also through doing things that are wholesome to ourselves. Privilege to me means that you have a lot to give. The Lubavitch Rebbe writes like this: money is generally regarded as something very important, has a very important thing and desirable. Okay. The Hebrew word for money, kesef, actually means something highly desirable. Money makes one rich. Without it, one is poor. But what is it that makes money so important and desirable? Money in itself is not something we can enjoy as food, right? Can't eat it unless it's chocolate, or make clothes from, or use as a building material for our home. It is what you do with money that makes it important, meaning there's a lot of potential there, because money can buy and provide all our needs. Moreover, with money, we can do many mitzvot, such as tzedakah, to help other needy people, to enable needy children to receive an adequate Torah education, etc. Money kept in a box is quite useless. So here the Lubavitch Rebbe is going to go and really like actually use money as a symbol for something else, that there's another kind of riches that young people have, that we all have. And it's specifically, I think, like it's beautiful how we think about how he conceptualizes this. There is another kind of riches, the great treasure of capacities and qualities with which God endows each and every child, intelligence, feeling, and the ability to do and accomplish things. Obviously, God desires to see these capacities to be put to good use and their fullest use. A Jewish child has to use his intelligence to study and understand the divine Torah in his or her fullest capacity. He has to express his feelings and love for God, his Torah, and the Jewish people, and in love for all things that should be loved. All the opposite feelings should be expressed in avoiding all things that should be shunned and rejected. This is why Torah chinuch is so vital. for it provides the knowledge of what is good and the incentive to do good all the time. If a child uses these God-given gifts as God desires him and her to use them, then they are truly rich. So it's like money is not should not be locked in the box, right? It's the same thing about the things that are given to us and our capacities, our talents, and our abilities. They should be used, they should be shown. And if they are, then that is true riches. And this means that everybody can be truly rich, which is not the case with ordinary money. A person seldom has a choice whether, you know, they can be rich or poor, right? It's really not entirely up to them. But in the matter of our behaviors and on our good deeds, everybody really can be rich. And this is entirely up to us. But if we keep everything sort of locked up, it's quite useless, and it would be an insult to God, according to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So when we give over our Chanukah gelts to our kids, this is part of the education. Okay, so we'll talk about actually the education towards responsible use of money, but also that the money sort of is representing of them, that it should be used for good, just like they should be sort of used for good, just like their capabilities and talents should be exercised and kind of seen and should see the light of day. And I think that this is like for sort of today's young people, like important, right? Where there is a lot of confusion, a lot of like concern and anxiety. Like, where do I belong? What exactly do I have to offer this world? What exactly do I have to contribute? It's hard. It is hard. I mean, I don't know if those of us remember what it is to be a teen. It's even harder today. And I think that there is something kind of very special in this message of like, kind of like giving over this Hanukkah gelt in this way that also kind of encourages kids to also kind of express themselves and be themselves in a way that money shouldn't be locked. It should be used. And we tend to think about kids in this kind of like, right, like, oh no, this affluenza or maybe Veruca Saul, like today, they don't really quite get it. They're spoiled. But it's actually like the research is showing that Gen Z is and this is the generation that's from 1995 kind of and on, that actually it's they kind of know they have a lot. But they also know they've seen what it is to struggle. They saw the millennials not, you know, graduating from college in 2008 and 10 and, you know, and not getting jobs. They're not taking out, they don't have a lot of debt. They're not interested in building up debt so much. And not just that, they're also the Gen Z is really interested in socially responsible investing. They want to do things with meaning. There is a desire for meaning in this sort of in these young people. So when we want to kind of sure, like, you know, kids today, they don't know how good they have it. There's for sure an element of that, but there is also an attunement where they know that it's not necessarily going to be so easy. Many of them have anxieties about where there's going to be a, you know, how they're going to put a down payment on their house. Forget about Toronto, right? Like there is, on the one hand, there's abundance, but there is also acute awareness that it's not exactly, you know, endless. And not just that, whatever gains that they do make, they do want it to be balanced with sort of like a positive impact in the world. And this is something that investors are sort of noting, taking, you know, like financial companies are taking note of. And so I think that this means that the sort of like the kids are ready for us to have these kind of conversations with them kind of about money. So I've got some practical strategies in terms of how we might educate towards generosity and appreciation. And here, before I kind of get into the things that I like, maybe I turn to you, August, group of parents, of educators, to hear things that you've done that sort of have worked well or that you think might work well in terms of educating kids or helping them sort of see and build generosity and appreciation for the good that they have.
I mean, one of the ideas that you mentioned earlier, anecdotally, I think other people do, I've heard of other people doing it as well, is that if you're giving a child money, like you're giving them $5 for X, they get an extra amount that is built in for tzedakah, or even it's baked in. You say, I'm giving you $6, and then you have to give from there to tzedakah. I think that's a really important element. So it's teaching them financial responsibility in terms of their own money, but it's also teaching them financial responsibility in terms of the community, which I think is a nice idea.
So I'm gonna say something, which is very different from the direction where this conversation is going, but it is definitely relevant. And it's something that happened to me recently in terms of appreciating money. There's a show on TV Ontario called Employable Me. I don't know if anybody's seen it. It's a documentary series where they follow young people with disabilities, physical or developmental disabilities, and look at the challenges they have in seeking employment and how important that first job is. And it's very different for people with disabilities to have volunteer positions as opposed to paid positions. And so most recently, I was involved in a situation where there was a young person who was volunteering with sort of in my life generally, a young person who was volunteering who does have a developmental disability. And I made the argument that that person should be paid because there's something very, very different and important for that young person to be paid versus just using their time to do mitzvot or to do something good as a volunteer. And I think that, and the decision finally was made to actually pay this young person. And the sort of ripple effect of that in terms of the parents and the individual and my own family who knew this story was quite profound. And I think that that experience, and even though we're not talking about a lot of money, sort of valuing time for money is something that was really an important lesson to people in my circle.
Thank you for sharing that. Other ideas of ways that you've sort of cultivated sort of an attitude? Yeah.
Some of the things we do in our house, I mean, we have like tzedakah before Shabbat, before we light candles every Shabbat, and then twice a year, like, you know, Pesach time and Rosh Hashanah time, the kids count it and the kids choose the tzedakahs that the money's going to. And even if it's, you know, $10 in the Pushkets, you know, $5 to, you know, Baycrest, $5 to theirs, whatever it is, right? But getting to really actively choose what kinds of organizations they want the tzedakah to go to. So they kind of, they own that tzedakah. And we, when we do allowance in our house, so we do it like, one thing we started doing more recently in the last year or two was, the kids, we realized like the kids were getting money, but they weren't spending it and they didn't really know how to spend it. So they like, we had like, okay, here's your money. You take 10% for tzedakah. That was easy, but then they never did anything with their money. Mm. So we, or they would, you know, randomly be like, can I get, you know, Tic Tacs, but which is fine, but it was just sort of, it wasn't like thoughtful. So we changed things up a bit where we said, where we had the kids, do some research and pick something out that they wanted to save for. And then, you know, break down how many months of, you know, to do this way and saving some for the, you know, the thing you're going to spend on, having some money just for the Tic Tacs and having some money just for your bank account and trying to divide it up as a way of being more thoughtful about what you're spending towards. One of the problems that comes up with is just so everyone, you know, in case lest anybody be like, wow, what a great idea. You guys are on the ball is, by the time they've saved up enough, sometimes their interest in that item is long gone because they're children. So, well, it takes a really long time to save up for that. Right. So if it's like if it's a $25 thing or a $60, whatever it is, right. If you're a kid by that time, your interest may have changed. So sometimes we still have that problem of what to actually do with that money. But we did realize like you have to be thoughtful about it from the start because otherwise our kids just get stuff from us and they don't think about what they want to spend on. So that's been important.
I love that. This book called Last Stop on Market Street is a really wonderful book. For those of you who have like sort of picked your book age kids, it's a really like beautifully illustrated and told story about a little guy, a young guy, a kid and his grandmother, and they ride the city bus. And it's what's perfect about it is like they are both privileged and not privileged in this story. And it shows that like really anybody could be in the position of sort of like giving but it takes a little bit the adult to articulate those things, right? And that's what I kind of like the takeaway here is like, let's talk about it more, about how we're doing things. And also obviously this is coming from the parents modeling those kinds of things. So modeling them, these things intentionally, talking about these kinds of ideas about responsibility, about charity, about sort of cultivating what we call an attitude of gratitude is key here. I have like three kind of sites that have like very good ideas as well. Feller talks about like kind of the before the candle lighting charity, you know, giving charity time, going to a soup kitchen, or like even like No Frills has that bin, right, of like the, you know, of like food donation and like, yeah, and just like throw it in. And like, but it's not just about throwing it in, it's saying like, I am giving this now, like, look, you know, narrating in some ways, like to the children, right, to show them like, I'm giving this because some people don't have enough to eat, so we're gonna leave this here for them. This, you know, there's some other good, really good ideas. This last link is like very kind of involved, but in terms of like wealth management, like how to kind of think about things kind of in the long term. So this is really where I will close. And so again, making the pitch for the kind of the good old fashioned Hanukkah gelt, simply because it opens this conversation around kind of giving and appreciation and generosity. But even if it's toys that you're giving, it's like somehow to have that conversation and to kind of bring things back to the original charity orientation, not just about like the getting of the gifts, right? But it's also about the kind of giving. And that's something that we want to kind of cultivate as consciously as we can. So thank you all for coming out tonight and having this conversation. It's really quite a pleasure. Wishing you a wonderful rest of the six nights of Hanukkah. And feel free to, you know, be in touch if you have any questions or final comments.
Thank you so much, Leah. It's really nice to have you sort of back in Toronto, even if it's only on Zoom. Yours is a really important voice, I think, in Toronto. So it's great to have you back. Thank you also for sort of reframing this. I think the idea of gifts and gelt on Hanukkah in a lot of quarters has sort of become this like anathema, like you're just following along with your Christian neighbors. And I really like how you've reframed it in a really positive way. And it's not even reframing. I guess going back to the sources to look at how this is a historically reasoned and appropriate thing to do. If anyone wants to tie a bunch of like disparate threads from this all together, so Hillel Rapp, who's on the call, in the Lair House, for which Leah Neuminkowitz is an editor, wrote a series of essays back and forth with Jay Kelman, also from Toronto, about Jewish philanthropy and education. So if anyone is interested in looking back at a two-year-old series of articles, they're available online. While I have everybody, I'm just going to give a quick plug for the remaining Hanukkah programs, and then we have to make way for the Rambam Shir that takes place here in a few minutes. So at 8 o'clock tonight, Rabbi Bergman has his ongoing Rambam Shir. Tomorrow night at 7:30 with Rabbi Diamond is Parashat HaShavua, followed by the general members meeting at 8:30. On Wednesday night, specific to Hanukkah, Hasbara is going to be doing a lecture on understanding Jewish indigeneity to the land of Israel. Same link that you're on right now. Thursday night at 7 is the Shul Hanukkah party, also on this Zoom, followed by Melech Halberstadt's Chumash Rashi Shir. And then Motzei Shabbat, 8 p.m., Professor Jimmy Diamond is going to be giving a lecture on From Temple, War and the Miraculous to Home, Peace and the Mundane, Rambam's Rededication of Hanukkah. And then on Sunday night, which is Rosh Chodesh, we're going to be hearing from Dr. Yael Bierstone on Ner Ish Uveito, the centrality of the home in the post-COVID era. So there's a lot of great things on tap for Hanukkah.
Jonathan, I just want to say before we close, two things. There's also going to be a wonderful Hanukkah celebration in Shul. You have to register. The Maccabees will be our guests on Shabbat morning. So please, everyone, join us. And I just want to thank Jonathan and the Adult Ed Committee. That we have a new Adult Ed Committee. They're just getting going. And this Hanukkah is really a debut of the incredible work and wonderful programming that we all have to look forward to. So on behalf of the Shul, Jonathan, I want to thank you and your committee for your creativity and your drive and your inspiration in making Hanukkah time of learning for our Shul. Chag Sameach.
Thank you to everybody. Everyone for coming. Chag Sameach.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Chag Sameach.
Bye.